What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a growing network of people who believe the center of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ, and that learning to take love seriously is vital for how we practice discipleship, mission, and leadership. The Gravity Leadership Podcast explores, in practical ways, how to root our lives and our leadership in this love that holds all of us and everything together.
Hi, I'm Christy Pentley here with the Gravity Leadership Podcast, and I'm here with my friends Ben and Matt.
Hey, we're
Matt,
here
you're
too.
Yawning.
What up, CP? It's been a long day. It's been a week.
It's only 2 p.m. recording this at 2 p.m. But it has been a week, hasn't it?
Man, it's been a week.
Oof.
On Wednesday, Ben texted a group of us, and he was like, "I can't deal with this anymore. I'm so glad it's Friday." That reminds me of this this little cartoon. This guy has like these papers and he's throwing them up, and the title is like, it's got the F word in it. So if you're listening with children, and it says F this stuff, and then the next thing is him bending over to pick up the papers. He said, "Just kidding, it's Thursday. I still need these." I feel like that was your week, Ben.
That was my week. Yeah. So far, we're recording this on a Friday, the actual Friday of that week, where Wednesday felt like Friday. But yeah, I've been reflecting. You know, we reflected last week a little bit on. You know, it's been a long pandemic. We're coming up on a year here of sort of when we really. Started grappling with it in earnest, mm-hmm. lockdown, all of that kind of thing. I was reflecting, I'm in a little bit more serious note, but I was reflecting that week on the need for resilience in the face of these challenges and just how unpracticed I am.
Yeah.
There's always been, typically for me, some escape valve or some, you know what I mean? Like some way of kind of taking a break from the challenge that has allowed. But anyway, I'm trying to learn resilience in the midst of this. And so
Ben, I had to show some resilience this past weekend.
Did you?
Because we took all five kids skiing for the first time. Now, many of them have skied, but we have never taken all seven of us up the mountain. Okay. And so we were like geared up and Paul took two snowboarders with him because he's a snowboarder. Uh-huh. And I took the three skiers on the bunny hill. You guys, I had two kids who've never skied before. I am not exaggerating to say it took an hour and a half to get up the magic carpet and down the bunny hill one time with the three new skiers. And at one point, I was like, "Don't cry, Christy, don't cry. Hold it together. You're the mom." And I needed some resilience.
You're
and I needed some
mom.
Grit. I was whoa. But you know what? The day ended great. And all five kids at the very end of the day were like, "We loved it. It was so fun. We only cried 17 times. No, not really. But you know what I'm saying? Like they were all happy memories by the end. But took some grit. Yeah. Took some grit.
True grit. Christy,
yes.
You got it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, anyway, I think I wasn't on this interview that we're about to listen to with Juanita Campbell Rasmus, but from the title of her book, I wonder if she has something to say here about developing resilience. One of the things that I'm learning for myself, at least, I've started writing. I write prayers in my journal, you know, from time to time. But the 2 days the 2 days following the Wednesday that felt like Friday, I just wrote a collect. I just wrote a prayer. A collect is just a prayer that everybody prays together, or that one person prays on behalf of the church. So it collects the prayers of the church. But that's been really helpful for me, is just sort of writing down like what I need. Like the resilience is sort of feels like this spiritual muscle that I need to work, but part of working it is learning to just to not react to my problems in the way that, you know, like, you know, F this stuff, throw your papers up in the air. Right. But it's like right. Learning to pick them back up and go, no, I need these. I still need these. And so.
Then you know the cartoon anyway. I'm talking about, right?
I love that cartoon. It's really funny. So, but
it channels some good energy.
Yeah. So but part of the way that I think collect my papers is to like write this prayer as a way of saying, don't react to the situation or the problem, but just be in the moment with mm-hmm. God and trust that like I'm going to receive everything I need. And that's what these prayers have kind of come from, is just this sense of like, I'm going to receive what I need if I can just stay here in the present moment instead of trying to escape from it or try to fix it or, you know, throwing it all up in the air. If I can just stay here, God will actually he will give me what I need. That's kind of part of what I'm learning. So,
yeah.
Well, and anyway. Juanita kind of went into that a little bit, even totally in her life. Like she was found in a place where she basically had to say, all right, God, here I am. I'm just going to be. Yeah. And, I'm excited to hear from her. So she's dynamite. Yeah, she's a firecracker. And let's get into the interview.
Well, I just want to, can I say something real quick, Chrissy, before we Please. Get into it? Both of us, before we hit record, you and I were saying, I wish Juanita was our pastor.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I want her to be someone that sits down with me regularly because she's wise and she's passionate. And I need that in my life.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right, well, I'm looking forward to hearing this now.
Gird up your ear holes. Reverend Juanita Campbell Rasmus, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, Juanita is a pastor. She co-pastor, is that right, with your husband?
That's right. That's right.
At St. John's United Methodist Church in downtown Houston. And you do about 33 other things that seem like full-time jobs to me, Juanita. So could you summarize briefly for our listeners, like, I don't know how many, you know, cats have 9 lives. Juanita must have 10 because of all the stuff you do. Tell us what other stuff you're involved with.
Well, I tell you, most of the things happen very organically. And so one of the things we're involved with is the Bread of Life, which is our outreach ministry. It was formerly for the homeless community in and around downtown Houston. But since then, it has transitioned into a emergency relief agency. And so as an example, Hurricane Katrina, although it happened in Louisiana, it brought, needless to say, hundreds of thousands of people to Houston, and they found Bread of Life in the St. John's downtown doorway. And so we literally began then providing services to those who have now since been affected by Harvey. Now we're doing relief for those who've been affected by the unemployment due to COVID-19. So we're distributing about 2,000 families a week from St. John's with our relationship with the Bread of Life. In addition to that, we founded Temenos CDC, which Temenos is a Greek word that basically is a cleft in a rock where the travelers would be able to find safety. And so we have a housing apartment complex That's about $30 million worth of housing for formerly homeless men and women. Basically, everything pretty much revolves around that. And now, of course, the book Learning to Be and the work we're doing to help empower people to live their most expansive lives.
Yes, that's what we're going to talk to you about today, Learning to Be, your new book. And the subtitle is Finding Your Center After the Bottom Falls Out. Christy is with me as well today. How are you, Christy?
I'm great. It's fun to be together.
It is fun to be together. Finding Your Center is the name of our year-long training program, Juanita. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Too bad. Like, I mean, we can see each other. People who are listening can't, but Juanita's eyes just got like saucers and big old smile. So, love
that. How amazing is that?
Yeah. So when I saw your book, so Juanita and I got to meet on a friend's front porch about 4 months ago. And when I saw her book, I didn't do exactly what Juanita did with my face, but I definitely had a similar reaction to the subtitle. I thought, I've got to get my hands on this book. And your book is hard to describe in one sentence because it's essentially how your life led you to a crisis point and how God met you in that. Could you maybe give us a sense about why did you need to write about that? What did God give you in your life that you felt like I need to put this down to share with other people?
Well, you know, when it first happened, I didn't really think I was writing it for other people. I thought I was writing it so I could capture what was going on and kind of remember, you know. So I woke up one morning. Life was normal, so it seemed. I prepared breakfast for our girls who were then in middle school and for my husband. And after we ate breakfast, our lives were so busy because we were co-pastoring a church that we started with 9 members. At this point in the story, it's about 3,500 members. So we were growing about 500 members a year. Mm. It was astronomical growth. Neither Rudy or I had ever been pastors before. This was strictly a deal where God said, go. And we did. And, you know, a world grew up around us. Right. And so when I prepared breakfast that day, my husband said, would you like me to take the girls to school? And I said, sure, that'd be great. And I joked and I said, because that way I can put my makeup on in the bathroom mirror instead of the rearview mirror. And so we both laughed. And so I hugged everybody and they left. I went to the bathroom, went to put on my makeup, and just all of a sudden felt really sick. The thing that I immediately thought about was how you can just all of a sudden get hit with the flu and it's like you're feeling fine and the next moment you're going, oh my God, I'm sick. What's going on? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking it's something like, well, maybe it was the flu or something. Or I called my secretary and said, I'm going to be in later because I'm not feeling well. And hung up the phone and literally saw myself pick up the phone, hit redial and say, I'm not coming in. I don't know if I'm coming back. I'm going to take a medical leave or a sabbatical or something. None of that was ever in my consciousness, right? This is like watching myself do this and hearing all this come out. And then I laid down and began to sleep 18 to 20 hours every day for a few weeks. And at around the second week point, my husband said, baby, I think you need some help. I think maybe we need to go to the doctor because it just wasn't like me, number one. So we go and get a complete checkup. They rule out diabetes. They rule out thyroid disorders. They rule out everything they can that's biologically related to the body, some dis-ease that might have been creating this. And so then my doctor said, I think you probably would be benefited by seeing a psychiatrist. And so I did. And when I went to see her, they diagnosed me with a major depressive episode. I don't think that... Well, as I look at having written, what happened to me is that in the process of finding out about the diagnosis, still sleeping, not being able to function, not being able to rethink any of that, about 6 months in, I think it was about 6 months, the Spirit said to me, I'll give you the treasures out of this darkness. There is nothing like the power of God to know exactly what needs to be said that becomes your hope. Mm-hmm. Okay. When God said, I'll give you the treasures out of this darkness, at the time, I didn't know that was out of Isaiah 45. and the secret riches hidden, riches hidden in secret places. I'll give you the treasures out of the darkness and riches hidden in secret places. For me, when God said that, the lifelong learner in me went, take notes, you're in class, right? Because yeah. I figured the only way you could get the treasures out of the darkness is you got to be able to live long enough to glean them, right?
Yeah.
And so I just kind of started taking notes as best I could at that time. So I wrote the book out of my own sense that I was supposed to take notes. Then there became a place where I realized, oh, this isn't just for me.
Yeah. So what struck me was that depression almost took you by surprise.
In the sense that
when you got the diagnosis, it wasn't like, finally, thank you, somebody can name this thing, this awful cloud. It was just that you had been doing so much for so long at such a high rate of speed that your body almost had to say, I'm done, before your brain could catch up.
Exactly. Matt, you have worded that so well, because that's exactly what happened. Here's what I know. We are addictive personalities. Mm. Most of us are. And we all have our different varying addictions, okay? But it was as though my brain was so hung up on my narrative. Work hard, strive, show that you can do a good job. Make sure that your work is, you know, perfect. And you are accounting for your life because you work for God. You know, yeah. and so that was the nightmare I was living with, you know, and I say nightmare because I've learned so much about how if we don't check our narrative will run us and it will ruin us. Because what God is offering us is a freedom. And so often, you know, it's really funny. I got to tell you this. When my girls were growing up, you know, in the United Methodist Church, you don't destroy the Eucharist, the Holy Communion. You don't just like throw it out, right?
Right.
And so whenever we would have extra communion wafers, the communion steward, who was like an aunt to my girls, would always give them the bag of leftover wafers, right? So they would come home and they would take communion over and over and over and over again. And we're Methodists. We're not Catholic. Catholics, that's understandable, okay? And so, but not only did they take communion over and over again, they accepted Christ over and over again. Every time the doors of our church were open, my girls would accept Christ again. Then they would come home. They were very young. And so they would come home and they'd want their dad to baptize them in the tub again, right? And so I say all that to add some humor to the reality that Christ keeps wanting to save us over and over and over and over again, because we keep getting saved at different levels. We keep getting an awareness of this abundant life, this with God life, and it comes at different levels. And I think often our suffering provides us with the grand invitation of, are you willing to let me save you again? Mm-hmm. Save you from your narrative, save you from old ways of thinking and being that aren't life-giving. Save you from your addictive nature and your addictive personality. Save you from cultural expectations that don't serve you and don't serve the kingdom. You know, so I think Jesus is offering to save us over and over and over again.
Man, I just this morning was reminded that, you know, I asked Jesus into my life when I was 4. But my time with the Lord this morning, I felt like my prayer was, and Jesus, I need you today as much as I needed you. I'm not going to tell you how old I am. You know, long time ago. But that's what you're saying, right? I mean,
yes, it is.
Every day, every moment. And God is there, so kind, so generous to give himself over and over and over, and we partake and we get to participate in what he has for us.
And that's if we're willing, you know, because here's what I found out. The reason It's called Learning to Be Finding Your Center After the Bottom Falls Out. It's because I shouldn't say that's why it's called that, but I guess really what I'm trying to say is what the message is that so often we get to our crisis place, our bottom falling out place, and whether that's a mental health diagnosis like it was for me, or a physical diagnosis of some disease in the body, or it is a divorce, or a dream that gets devastated, a business that falls apart, whatever the thing is that becomes the basis for our bottom, right?
Yeah.
What I realize is that it is just almost normative for us to want to run away from the divorce. And just, if I could just get this behind me, if I could just get on to my new life, if I can just become, you know, move out into the new space, if I could just get this bankruptcy off my record, it's always this kind of hurry and get away from the thing, whatever the thing is for you, right? And what I realized and why the Lord gave me that scripture is all the real riches of our world come out of dark places. Diamonds come out of the depth and darkness of the earth. Oil comes out of the depth and darkness of the earth, right? Pearls come out of the darkness of the oyster clam and the irritation of a grain of sand that this oyster is really trying to get rid of, right? And in the process of trying to get it from out of that shell makes a pearl. But it was devastating for the oyster. It felt disorienting, perhaps, for the oyster. I've never interviewed an oyster, but I'm just guessing that it would be a bit disruptive, right? And so often the thing that disrupts our lives, we just want to silence it and move past it. And I think we're missing out on so much, because when the Lord told me he would give me the treasure, it made me decide, okay, this might take a while, but I'm going to get everything out of this that God wants me to have.
Yeah. Yeah, Juanita. I want to back up, because I think you self-reported on one of the things that kept you from sitting in the darkness was this narrative that you kept repeating over and over. Do it well, do it excellent, get it done, knock it out. You mentioned in your book being helped.
thework.com. Yeah.
I think we lost Matt, but we'll keep going. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The work.com by Byron Katie is a work of inquiry. And this is what I've learned. You know, nobody ever really asks you, who are you? They'll say, what do you do? But they don't really ask us. When we introduce each other, we don't really say, who are you? They say, what do you do? Right. And so that perpetuates this narrative about productivity being who we are. What Byron Katie invites us to do is to check our narrative, to question what we've been saying to ourselves, the story we've been telling ourselves, to question and to deeply question what's been happening in our life and how we've been reporting on it, how we've been living it out, to ask ourselves. And really, it's based on four questions. Is it true? Now, I just did a conference this morning with a group of people from Ghana who read the book and an organization that sponsored that. And we were talking about our narratives. It was amazing to me that narratives are cross-cultural. So part of my narrative was the performance, the good little girl, follow all the rules and all this stuff, right? And so Byron Katie's work asks us to ask the question. So my part of my breaking down my narrative with truth was to say, do I have to be perfect? And the answer is no.
This podcast is brought to you by Gravity Leadership Academy, our 10-month online training intensive for Christian leaders who want to root their life and leadership in God's love and bring lasting transformation to their culture. In Gravity Leadership Academy, you'll learn the real-life practicalities of how to notice God's presence and activity in and around you, so you can participate more fully in God's life and mission, and open up space for those around you to do so too. We've worked really hard to make this training in missional leadership practical and doable. To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
Juanita, you mentioned in your book, I want to back up to something you said about noticing the narratives. And this is something that we do at Gravity, is we help people notice the stories they're telling themselves. And it's amazing how these scripts, these tapes play. This, we call it our operating system, where every app, every action we open in our lives is based upon this operating system. And you named yours like Do It Perfectly. You mentioned that your uneasy, complicated relationship with a Proverbs 31 woman. And like that's sort of in your bones. But you mentioned Byron Katie's The Work as something that helped you begin to face and reckon with that. With those narratives, can you name maybe what those, she has four questions, what those four questions are and how they helped you sort of confront that stuff and meet God in the darkness?
Yeah. So she has a form called One Belief at a Time worksheet. And when you go to ByronKatieTheWork.com, look at her downloads. She's got plenty of videos and she even has a book that explains all of this process. Mm-hmm. I was trained to do what's called inner healing prayer. I don't know if your audience is aware of that, but this is the equivalent of inner healing prayer where you have to write it down and you do the work of the process, okay? So there are four questions. She says, as it relates to belief, write down a stressful belief. Often our narratives are filled with stressful beliefs, okay? And so I love to point out the fact that in the middle of the word belief is the word lie, L-I-E.
Yes.
Okay. So the four questions she asks is, number one, is it true? So Juanita, is it true that you have to perform for other people's acceptance and approval? Well, at any point in my life, I would have said, absolutely. That's the only way you can be affirmed, isn't it? Is that somebody else gives you a certificate or a pat on the back or a compliment or a trophy for a good production? I mean, isn't that the way that works? And then the second question is, can you absolutely know that it's true? Well, most of us go back to our experience and we say, well, golly, ever since I was in kindergarten, I did my first Easter speech. The people applauded. That's the way it's been showing up in my life. So yeah, this is absolutely true, right? Because our what? Our default system is playing. So then the third question is this. How do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? And then I talk about how it feels to be stressed out trying to get your sermon together after 20 hours of working on it. And it doesn't seem to be manifesting. And you're thinking that God's not going to show up for you. And you just start playing this scenario of how it's not going to work out. And you're going to flop on the stage and everybody's going to see you. And you're going to be like naked in front of everybody. You know, you just go through this whole spiraling down process that dehumanizes us.
Yeah.
Takes our energy. Takes away our creativity, and we forget how many times we've been in that place and God has shown up for us.
Yeah. You know?
The fourth question, okay, so when she says, how do you react? What happens when you believe the thought? What emotions arise when you believe that thought? What comes up for you? What images of the past and even what projections on the future are you making? Then how do you treat yourself and others when you believe that thought? And then the fourth. So that was just all part of question three. But the fourth one is this. Now, I love this. I love it because it just points to the goodness of God. God is always not only longing to save us from our narrative, but to free us to be our most authentic and expansive self. The fourth question is this. Who would you be without that thought? So let me give you an example of how that looks. So let's use the sermon thing. pardon me, preparing the sermon. It's been 20 hours. you know, you've worked on it all week for 20 hours, and yet here it is Saturday night at 9 o'clock, and this sermon is no less together than it was 20 hours ago, right? And so then you start going through all the scenarios in your head, whatever your story is, whatever your story of shame or guilt or anger or whatever it is, whatever the story is, the narrative starts playing, right? And so then the fourth question asks us to say to ourselves, so who would I be without the thoughts of shame and guilt and resentment and whatever else might be floating around in the atmosphere? Who would I be? Well, I'd be Juanita, sitting here at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, needing the Holy Spirit to speak to me. Now, if you sit in that kind of energy, that's a creative energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a beating yourself up energy. That's not, it's doom and gloom, catastrophize this sermon out, you know, to the church collapses and falls apart because you couldn't pull the sermon together, you know, all the stuff we do to ourselves as part of our narrative.
Yeah.
And so when you work through this process, and I've had to work through it with all kinds of beliefs, you know, beliefs in my marriage, beliefs with my daughters, belief with my grandchildren, that if they're not disciplined a certain way, they're going to go to hell, you know, whatever. Or just all these kinds of, we are a walking pack of story. And at some point, you have to ask yourself, now, is this true? Has this been my experience of God, that he's going to throw me into the depths of hell and punish me and I'll never see his face again, this God who claims to love me? Has this been my experience? That's not been my experience. But I had a picture of a punitive God that had not changed since childhood. But when I began to do this work by Byron Katie and working with my psychotherapist and working with my spiritual director and having friends who speak truth into my life, even when I don't want to hear it, you know, who invite me to question my thoughts. Now, not everybody does that. Not everybody's going to question your thoughts, but I've given people in my life permission to ask me, is that true? Is that really true?
This is so good, because I think so often people only want to scratch the surface, yeah. Right? We have a lie that we're believing, and maybe we could even recognize it as a lie, but we actually don't dig any deeper than the fact of just noticing it, right? And if you don't dig deeper to really knowing what is the truth, I've been believing this lie for how many years? What is the actual truth? Can we actually live in the truth if we don't actually really dig into that? So, so good and so needed and seen, I think, at least in my life, I need it every day, right?
Yes.
Every day.
Yeah. And you know, Christy, what I realize is that there's two kinds of pain, the pain to keep living the lie and the pain to work towards the truth. There's going to be pain either way. Pick your pain. You know,
yes.
It's just the reality of life and humanity and suffering, you know, that we're going to hurt. When you have broken a leg and you find out it didn't set and it's got to be broken again, that's going to hurt. I don't care what you tell yourself. You know, it's going to be uncomfortable. But the reality is the spine will get to align properly. You'll begin to walk in a way that's harmonious with every step because you were willing to go through the pain of recovery and healing, you know? So pick your pain.
Yeah. So your body shut it down, said you're sleeping 18 hours at a time. And then your mind had to catch up. Oh, this is what's going on with me. Yeah. Maybe we can then talk now about your spirit. Because as you begin to interrogate these scripts, these narratives that weren't doing good work for you, and were maybe leading to this exhaustion or having you live out of living towards or in reference to a punitive God.
Sure.
What were some of the things that began, what were some of the ways that you ordered your spirit or opened your spirit to begin to reckon with this stuff, to mine out the treasures in the darkness?
Well, one of the things that happened for me is that the spirit said, if you'll let me, I'll help you build a life you can live with. And so for me, that was a no-brainer, of course. I mean, I don't want every 7 years my life to end up like this, because it looks like that's how this works, you know? And so as I began to just listen, and here's what happened. Silence is like a marinade. And if we'll engage the silence, and I talk about this in the book, how sometimes we're like a piece of fish. It doesn't take a lot of marinade on fish because too much marinade will literally cook the fish. Okay. So those are those moments where we are already so open and so ready. But then there are times when we're like chicken. We need to be coated on both sides, soaked, you know, if you can, cover us all the way up with the marinade so it really gets in there, right?
I just saw shake and bake. Shake and bake in my mind.
I haven't thought of shake and bake for years. That's amazing.
You and me, Eva, you know? Oh, my gosh. And then there are times we're like brisket.
Oh, now you're speaking my love language.
All right. You know, let it stay in the marinade overnight. If it can do 24 hours, that won't hurt it before you put it on the grill, you know, because there's that deep stuff. So for me, I don't, that's a very good question. But I think for me, what happened is I felt so empty, so exhausted, so worn out, beat down, whatever you want to call it, that I knew that my way wasn't working. And so for the Spirit to offer me a way, I almost really didn't care what it looked like. Let's do it, because it's got to be better than this. You know, I had no joy, you know. And that doesn't mean anything to somebody who knows joy. But to give you a little example of how shut down I was, do you know what it's like to go outside on a beautiful sunny day and the sun is like making everything shine, you know? We've all had that experience. You walk out and you feel the warmth, and especially after a time of winter where you've been inside and, you know, that first day when the sun is out, people are out, they're jogging in parkas, you know, with ski shoes on and stuff, you know? But it just enlivens you. You come alive. I was so dead. I was so joyless that any possibility of coming alive, I wanted it. And God made that available.
Yeah, I hear a couple things, Juanita. And then I'm curious, Christy, what you're hearing too. One is, you mentioned you got to choose the pain that you're going to embrace. And right. And most of our stories tend to follow the human rule that we don't usually change unless the pain of changing is less than the pain of staying the same, you know? And what I heard you say is like, the pain of staying the same was I couldn't get out of bed. And my husband's like, you need to go to the doctor. So that's right, like, right. You know, you just shut it down. The second thing I heard you say, and I wonder if you could double click on this more. Why is silence so terrifying? Like, why would we rather do anything other than be silent and still before the Lord?
You know, first of all, silence is very much like a light, and it shines on our narrative. When I've gone into silence, one of my friends does this annual 40-day silent retreat. And so whenever I ask him, well, how was it? He said, well, it was 40 days of silence. You know what that's about. And so what he was saying to me was that you either going in knowing that it is going to be a hallelujah chorus with you and the Lord, right? Or you go in and every step of the way into the silence, you're becoming more and more butt naked. And you're feeling more and more vulnerable. Now, it's not because of anything the Lord is doing. It's simply, do you remember the scripture that says, who was that that asked God to let him see him face to face? And he said, no, I'm going to let you see my hind parts because you couldn't take seeing me face to face. Silence is the hind parts of God. But what it does for us is it helps us to see how much we need God. It helps us to see the places in us that are bearing toxic fruit. It helps us to see the places in us that are yearning and longing for more of life with God. We get to see how easily we get distracted from the presence of God. We get to know things about ourselves that if the light of silence hadn't shone on us, we would just keep being busy and distracted. And so what happens in that space is I find that for me, I often just long for God in the silence. Sometimes it has been scary, but I've gotten, I think, so accustomed to it that I welcome it. Because if it's scary, that means it's some deep doodle we getting ready to dig through.
You know what I'm saying?
And there are times when it has just been such an incredible place of rest and renewal. So it can be either of those things and all of those things. And for some people, I get it. Because a lot of people have experienced a lot of pain in silence. You know, they were being abused and told to be quiet. You know, somebody put their hand over their mouth and that kind of thing. So silence can be terrifying to some people. And I have a dear, dear friend that has been the case for her. And so I would never recommend she go on a silent retreat, not right away. But what about just 2 or 3 minutes of deep breathing? And if your mind starts to wander, bring it back to the breathing and just noticing the breathing as a means of just letting your mind rest for a bit. Because that, for me, rest is the one thing that I really get in silence.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, but I feel like as I'm hearing you share, what's resonating in my heart is, ooh, I'm not good at that. In fact, what came to mind is when I was in college, I did this class. It was like an outdoor education class. And part of our class was that we had to go camp for a week with a bunch of people and hike around and all that kind of stuff. And we had a 24-hour silent retreat by ourselves. We had to camp by ourselves. We had to be by ourselves. I came back early. I couldn't do it. Like I came back to my professor. Yeah. I think a couple hours early and he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, this is so hard for me. But what I hear you say is God met you in that.
Oh,
and God continues to meet you in that. And truly in a life transformational way from your depression to really uncovering and unearthing your identity being that you are God's beloved. I mean,
yes.
That is what kind of surfaced and that what you were like, this is the truth I need to live into. Can you speak to that just a little bit?
Sure. Let me say something before that. I think a good way to look at a silent retreat, an extended period of time of silence, okay, could be like Jesus being led by the Spirit into the wilderness. Mm-hmm. It says he was tempted there, right? Because he was tempted to claim power, to claim, to display that power, being challenged to display it, and, you know, all the things that I always think of that temptation as being really just two things, inadequacy and scarcity. None of us wants to deal with our inadequacy. None of us wants to deal with the places in us that operate out of scarcity. That's fearful and that's fear making, right? Jesus goes through the wilderness. The Spirit leads him to that place. But then here's the part we tend to miss. And then the devil fled from him and he was cared for by the angels. Mm-hmm. See, we have to go through that uncomfortable place, Christy, where you want to get out of there. You just want to run. You want to do anything but be quiet. And if we can train ourselves, and I'm not saying that I would ever recommend somebody who's never gone on silence to do 24 hours silent. I think for some people, it needs to be some, you know, 5 minutes, then 25 minutes and, you know, in a graduated sense like that, because it's real. It's a very real place. Silence is a place. Okay. And yes, the truth is there. And that truth for me is almost always the comfort of the angels. Because God doesn't just like pull our skin off of us, leave us with this ripped off flesh, and then, you know, have our being exposed to all the elements, and then the vultures can come. You know what I'm saying? What God does is say, this is going to hurt, but let me show you something. And he shows us, and then he says, now, give me a second. I'll put a balm on this for you. Mm-hmm. But you needed to know that there's this happening in your life, and it's not going to do you much good if you keep ignoring it, if you keep staying so busy that you don't pay attention to what's driving you, if you keep allowing distractions to keep you from intimacy with me, because intimacy means into me, you see.
Love it. Yes. Oh, that's so good, Juanita. So what I do like about this book so much is that it's not this clinical deep dive in depression, and it's not this biblical necessarily, but a biblical theology, but it's really like your travel log through the darkness.
I love that. Yeah, it's, I love that idea.
And I feel like one of the things that helps us is to, you know, we're creatures made for attunement. When we feel seen and known, we know ourselves better.
Yes.
And your book functions as a as permission and validation to know ourselves better as we find our story in yours. And so, yeah, I commend it wholeheartedly. I guess one of the final things I want to talk about is something you get to towards the end of your book, and that is something we talk about a lot here, but I feel like I'm still a novice about it. Could you speak a bit to how you reckoning with what you wanted, reckoning with your desires, how that was a part of the treasure that God had for you?
Yeah. So one day, I think I had gone to see my psychiatrist, and she asked me what was it that I really wanted? And what she was doing was juxtaposing what I wanted to what I was doing, okay? Because my identity had been so engraved in doing is who I am. And so she said, well, what do you really want? What do you want? And when she asked me that question, and I talk about this in Learning to Be, I said, it was like realizing you had lost something and you needed to call 911 and get somebody to come help you find it. Because the only places in my life where I was ever asked what I wanted was typically at a restaurant. And often I ate at the same restaurants, and the waiters always knew what I was going to get because I almost always got the same thing, you know? So it was more like, you're regular? And I'd go, yeah, right? So when she asked me what I wanted, I was like at a loss for words. No images came to mind, no words, no feelings. I was just empty blank inside. And so the Spirit led me to take a file folder and to get it out. And much like I have this file folder here with stuff in it, this is Byron Katie stuff in this file. But the Spirit said, okay, write on it, want to. And I said, okay. And then led me on this process of every time I saw an image or a word or a picture of something that kind of appealed to me, I would put it in that want to file. So I put in things like hot air ballooning. I put in somebody on a hike. It was a really pretty day. I put in a cruise ship, somebody on a cruise, you know. I put in words like adventure and just a variety of things. And one of the things I put in it was a picture of a person skydiving. And so I put all those things in the file, and I would add to it from time to time. I would see a picture or something, and I would just drop it in. And what it helped me to do, and I didn't know it consciously at the time, even though now I do, what God was doing was helping me to activate my desire. You see, the Bible says God will give us the desires of our heart if we keep our mind stayed on God. But the problem is most of us have no desires because we're so busy performing. And so what God was saying to me is, I'm going to help you create some desires. Then one of the other things that was done for me is I was reminded to reflect on my childhood. What were the things I did for fun? I know you got a bunch of leaders on this call, on this podcast. What did I do for fun? What was pleasurable? and didn't have anything to do with anybody else but me. Because I was so used to putting everybody else first and putting myself on the back burner. But in order to give, you've got to receive first. And so what I came to realize is that God was interested in my desires. One of the very first things, at this moment, I cannot remember. You know, when you write a book, you edit out, a lot of stuff gets edited. I don't know if you remember, did I mention anything about going to Africa?
No, I don't think so, Juanita.
Okay, so one of the things that happened for me is that I was sitting on the sofa and the Spirit said, where's one place you've always wanted to go? And I'm like, no, I don't know, because I couldn't remember. And so, because my memory was so shut down, that part of my brain was just like toast, okay? Mm. And it took a long time for it to recover. And so I said, God, I don't remember. I don't know. And so God said, think about it. Where have you always wanted to go? And I'm like, I don't know. Where have I always wanted to go? And so God said, you've always wanted to go to Africa. And I said, oh, I did. Because I was so shut down. I didn't remember. And so I said, okay, Africa. All right. And so I wrote that in my file, right? This was like in probably September, November of the year. And by January, I got a phone call from our denominational headquarters asking me to go to Africa in place of one of our bishops. Now, you have to understand pecking order in the United Methodist Church, and I'm at the very bottom of it, okay? So for me to be asked to go to Africa, all expense paid trip, in place of a bishop so that I could attend the United Nations Conference on World Racism.
Wow.
Now, why am I telling you that story? Because God longs to give us what we desire. And God will even help us co-create the desires if we'll invite God to do so. You see, if you don't invest any time in silence, you won't hear what God is saying. I can't wait for you to go do this. I'm looking forward to you to take that trip to Paris. I'm looking forward for you to go to London. I'm looking forward for you to take that walk on the, how do you say the Crucio, the walk through Spain? What is it called?
Oh,
do you remember?
Oh, gosh.
Okay, anyway, that it's the, see, I always think of it. Crucio, but anyway, that walk, that so many, the pilgrimage, right? Mm-hmm. That so many people take. God has these wonderful ideas for us, that God is longing, that often was in us when we came into being. But as we got older and other people's opinions began to matter to us and other people's expectations began to be important to us, we set aside those longings and those desires. And God is still saying, I am longing for you to live into that. Because when you do that thing, you're going to know something more about you and you're going to fall in love with me. And so when we push those things aside and when we push them back, when we are waiting on the kids to get older, when we're waiting on the house to get paid for, when we're waiting on retirement, when we're waiting to get the bonus check, that, you know, when we're doing all this waiting, all this pushing back of those desires, what happens is it tunes down the energy on them. And other things have more energy, more pull for us, more things that aren't always necessarily life-giving.
Do you know what I hear when you say all that is the sentence, he is so good? Because sometimes the narrative we tell ourselves as Christians, right, is that he's not generous or he's not good.
Right.
He's not active and he's not, but he is, you know,
absolutely.
He is. And so
it's
just such a good reminder for me and for our listeners to hear that God is good and he meets
absolutely.
Us. He meets
absolutely.
Us. In our silence, in our circumstance, in whatever's going on. So thank you so much, because it's just a really good reminder of the truth of who he is.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's what this is really all about. That's why Byron Katie's inquiry is so important. It's inviting us to check our narrative, because we become like the God we believe in.
Yes.
So I became judgmental because I believed that God was judgmental and everything was black and white and it's either right or wrong or it's good and bad. And then I come to St. John's and find out there's 9,989,000,000,000,000 shades of gray.
Mm-hmm. Praise Jesus.
Yes. Praise Jesus. And Jesus is loving all the shades.
Yeah.
While I'm judging what's black and what's white.
Yeah. Mm. This is so good, Juanita. I just want to maybe tie something you said at the beginning to what this thing about desire here. It occurred to me as you were talking that when we live in our activity or our minds and we don't tap into our hearts, I know sometimes in Christian circles we're taught to be scared of our hearts because you got some of our cousins and uncles and aunts that are like just kind of a name it, claim it kind of thing. Like God wants me to have a Bentley, and then you've got the other side, which is really serious Christians trying hard to be really good. And they want to kill all these desires, this kind of Victorian virtue that, the pinnacle of Christianity is this stoic, unfeeling, undesiring. But what you're naming is actually salvation.
Over and over again.
You're naming it. And it comes back to the thing you brought up in the beginning. And it makes so much sense about why you are experiencing this season of your life caught up in your head and caught up in your activity as depressing is because there's no joy unless we're living embodied, full-hearted lives.
That's right.
There's no joy.
That joy piece, let me tell you, that has been so elusive for me for such a long time. And when I found the experience of joy, and which is why I tell that story about Africa. Now, keep in mind, the only thing I had to do for that trip was have a passport and show up. Everything was paid for, right? Mm-hmm. And to know that God loves me like that, and that this is not a once in a lifetime kind of thing. It's not like, I remember that one good time, but that God wants to show up like this every day. Let me give you an example. Now, this might sound silly to somebody, but for me, I have been so focused on the rules of God, right? Not realizing God wanted relationship. So this ring I have on, this is a compilation of four different rings and I have them stacked, right? And so one day I lost this ring. Well, I bought this little ring as the stone to represent my grandson. And I lost it, couldn't find it anywhere. And so there's this prayer I pray when I lose something. I say, okay, God, nothing is lost in you. And if it's okay that I find this thing, would you allow it, right? Let me tell you where I found this ring. I had bought a big bag of popcorn from a popcorn shop here in Indianapolis, and it was huge. And so I had eaten a little bit down, right? And so I had gotten to the point where I had about this much popcorn. And so one day I was just sitting there and missing my husband because he's in Houston and I've been in Indianapolis being grandma, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm eating through this popcorn, y'all, and I get to the bottom of the bag and my ring is in it.
Okay? Great.
That's the kind of God I serve. A God who knows that there are these little things that make Juanita's heart happy.
Yes.
And that God is willing to do those little things that make Juanita's heart happy. Okay. And so for me, this is, if I could empower people by learning to be, to come to know this God who is so compassionate, who is so loving, this God who, when you walk the labyrinth, says, go skydiving. Mm. Right? Mm. Something I wanted to do all my life. And God was saying to me when I went skydiving, who do you think put this desire in you? See, I thought it was mine.
Right.
And so then because I thought it was mine, it meant I thought I could do with it what I wanted. Mm. But God was saying, I'm the one that put this desire in your heart. And aren't you glad you came? And I was like, heck yeah, let's do it again.
That's a word for me, Juanita. Who do you think put this desire in you? It's not yours, it's mine. I need to sit on that today. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being with us. Two things. Number one, I can't walk past that popcorn stand in the Indianapolis airport and not buy popcorn either. I just want you to know.
That's where I got the popcorn from.
I know it is. I knew it was. And I know, just know that you've got a brother here who also eats that popcorn compulsively.
Yes!
It's a good thing I don't fly every day because my health couldn't take it. Number two, Camino de Santiago. The El Camino.
Thank you. That's it. Yes.
I know. That's I remember it. Like 2 seconds after you said it, yes. And then I just didn't want to interrupt you, but we both had a brain freeze. Juanita, if people are listening, we're going to put a link to your book in the show notes, but how else can they find you online? Where else are people able to connect with you?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and everything is pretty much Juanita, J-U-A-N-I-T-A, Rasmus, R-A-S-M-U-S. And then you can also go to my website, JuanitaRasmus.com.
And you mentioned before we hit record that you're going to be doing an online something coming up here this
week. Yes, I'm so excited. This will be our third event. You know, God is so funny. I finished the book and I was kind of like, okay, I'll sit back and chill, right? I said, not quite. There's the learning to be experience. And I was like, oh, there he is. Oh. Yeah. And so January the 23rd, 2021, it's a Saturday, we'll be doing a 2.5-hour learning to be experience. It's an experience of envisioning your 2021, who you want to be in 2021. And all right. So you can check it on my social media and all those places. You'll see access point where you can get the information and register. I'd love to have your audience to join me. That'd be wonderful.
Yes. I may join you for that too. And we got to run, not just because we want to honor your time, but because my son at home learning 12-year-old is practicing violin in the room next door.
It's and we do have outro. Time.
It's music time at the Teddy House. Our outro music's it's a little better than a 12-year-old playing violin. So Juanita, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a delight to talk to you, and God bless you.
Likewise. Let's do it again sometime. Thanks to you and Christy both.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Our show is produced by Ben Sternke, Matt Tebbe, and Ben Hardman. Aaron Sternke does our mixing and mastering. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com. If you find our podcast helpful, share it with your friends in person and on social media. And don't forget to rate and review us online, as well as subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can join our Gravity community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join. And hey, we'd love to hear from you. Ask a question, make a comment, send us an idea, a recommendation, recipe, whatever. You can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.